You ready to go? What's up? This is Movies On Up. Thunder will rain. The thunder to my lightning is seated right across from me, and that is, of course, my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella.
Striking it down like always. Is that what thunder
Fair
does?
Fair enough,
I don't
yes.
know.
The god of the pod, Mr. Dave Bisella. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Thunder will rain is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guess to us via the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct and we choose you, we will assemble a prize package and send it over your way. This week, I think we teased it maybe last week or the week before. I would say it's a giant departure for us, but it's not. I mean, format-wise, we do movie episodes, but we don't generally do discussion episodes based on a movie that's still in theaters. Or
especially
at least
one that just came out.
That's it.
Like, I mean, we did Wonder Woman last year, but it was a month or two
we've
after.
We've done Star Wars.
The Star
that were
Wars,
weeks
we
after.
Usually give them a couple weeks to resonate, but
Avengers Infinity War, not so much. We decided that our 6th anniversary episode is next week, and that kind of coincides with the launch of the original Avengers movie. So we thought, hey, we have the opportunity. And of course, Dave and I were going to go see that movie. So why the hell not talk about it? I don't think you can really be on the internet or almost even in pop culture right now and not have Avengers stuff hit you. So
we want to be 100% upfront. If you have not seen Avengers Infinity War yet, stop listening. Because we do, generally, we'll try to hold back and not really spoil anything. We are going to talk full blow about it. So if you have not seen it, and if you're just like, oh, I'll listen to see what they think about it before I go, no, just go.
How about this? Impromptu, very quick, spoiler-free review. In case somebody hasn't seen it yet and they're like, oh, well, for whatever reason, they care what we think.
As good as it needed to be.
Yes, I would say very good. I liked it a lot. Can't wait to see it again.
Wanting more.
Keep in mind, it is the first part of a two-part story. That is something I don't think the people behind me realized, and it was reminiscent of maybe seeing the Fellowship of the Ring, where that ends, and people are like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of
the
same thing.
They took
the
part one out of the title.
Sean Bean dies in this one, too, so.
Yeah. But yeah, so we are going to spoil the crap out of it, which I doubt that if you're listening to this, you haven't seen it.
Infinity War opened to $258 million domestically, over $600 million globally. I think there's a good chance that pretty much everyone that wants to see
that's about our full audience.
Yeah, I would say. It's our full audience about 258 million times. But that was, of course, good for first place last week by a long, long shot. In case you're wondering, A Quiet Place, I Feel Pretty, Rampage, and Black Panther were your top five.
I did
for
want
last
to mention
week.
Nobody's talking about that. Like,
the Black
like, Panther oh,
is back
Black
in.
Black Panther's in the top five. Like, still, it hasn't been out of the top 10. Like, I think it was 7 or 8 the week before, but it went back into the top 5. So Marvel not only broke the all-time opening record, yeah, but they have a movie in the 11th week still in the top 5.
That made more money, got a really nice Infinity War bump, I guess. People maybe, instead of seeing that movie twice, because maybe you couldn't, the showings were sold out, but I do know that the theater that played Infinity War that I saw had played Black Panther about 2 hours before. So certainly Black Panther, to a lesser extent, Homecoming, but Ragnarok, they all do a good job of kind of leading you to the events of the Infinity War. One thing, you know, I do want to mention, we talked about having $258 million, which is the largest opening ever. It beat out The Force Awakens by about $11 million, which is close when you're talking about 250 plus. Of the top 10 openings of all time, 6 are MCU movies. Infinity War, the first Avengers, was number 5. Black Panther had the 6th largest opening ever. Age of Ultron was 7. Civil War, 8. Iron Man 3 is 9. So those are obviously all Marvel movies.
And I mean, Avengers, the first Avengers was the biggest at one. That's the first movie that ever opened at 200.
Yes.
I didn't think we would see movies open at 200, and Avengers was the first one that did. So they kind of set the bar there.
They've set the bar not just necessarily for the MCU, but for Disney. If you want to open up a little bit, two of the other top 10 openings are Star Wars movies, and it's The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, respectively, are 2 and 3. So that's 8 of the top 10 are Disney. Make it 9. Beauty and the Beast is also in the top 10, and they are at number 9. The only movie that's not a Disney...
Fast and Furious?
Nope.
No?
Nope. The only movie that is not Disney related is Jurassic World.
Oh, yep.
At number 5.
That beat the Avengers. The only reason I thought Fast and Furious, because it had, up until this weekend, the largest international opening weekend.
Yeah, and that got beat too. Basically, everybody got beat up by Thanos. The family, Star Wars, it didn't matter. You were getting punked. And after 1 week, and most of this box office stuff, usually by the time we're talking about a movie, it's out of theaters or it's getting close to being wrapped up. This is just getting started. But if for whatever reason, Disney decided to pull Infinity War from the theaters as of now, after 1 week, it would be the 105th highest grossing movie of all time, right above this awesome, mostly animated movie from 2014, the Lego movie. And a single spot below a movie featuring the voice of Doctor Strange in dragon form.
One of the Smaug Desolation.
The Desolation of Smaug, the second of the Hobbit movies. This movie opened to almost as much money as a Lord of the Rings movie made in its entire theatrical run. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I mean, it opened at $257. It's still pulling in about $20 million a day, so... Before you even get to the weekend, it's going to be almost
$350.
And then I think the only question is, it's going to get $100 million this weekend. Does it do $150? In its second weekend, does it do $150? I think it does.
I mean, if it drops off 50%, you know,
what? It's still $125.
Exactly.
I think it can do $150 because there's not a major... Bad Samaritan, I think, is the biggest release. And I don't really think that's going to push into it. So I think 150. So you're talking after 2 weeks, or after just 2 weekends, it's going to be at 500 million, which after 2 weekends, it'll be...
Well, I mean, 500 million would be another 250 million. Realistically, I think we're
get about 100 through the week. And
maybe
then
400 million. It does bring up an interesting point. Like, what are...
Like, it'll be in the top 15 by the end of this weekend,
yeah.
I think.
So what are the end game if we're projecting forward? And we did last week, tried to figure out, okay, is it going to open to 250? We said yes, it did. So looking forward, is it going to be able... I think it has an excellent shot of passing Black Panther for third place all time.
257, and then say roughly 100 through the week would be 350. And
okay,
150
you mean
for
another,
the weekend.
Okay, I thought you were saying 150 for the whole week.
No.
Okay.
So it'd be like 500 after this weekend, which would put it in that 10th place territory.
Right.
And after 2 weeks.
Yes. Does it have enough in the tank, do you think, to pass Avatar at 760?
That's a lot. That's a lot to go because you're in a crowded area. There are things that are going to start taking audience away from it. And we talked about, like, I think the threshold is, does it meet Black Panther? Panther is at 689.
Yes.
And it's...
And climbing.
Yeah, and it's in the 11th weekend. It's going to end around 700.
It does have about a $50 million lead over Black Panther after 3 days, for what that's worth.
Yeah, but Black Panther was at a slower time. A
lot of staying power.
I don't see the Avengers in the top 10 after 11 weeks, so it's got to make its money now. And, I mean, 150 in the second weekend.
It has. It's made its money now. Like, they're doing that.
It's got to get that bulk now. It doesn't have the 11 weeks that Black Panther has had. Will it pass the Avengers at 6, which is 623? I think so. Will it get all the way up to Black Panther, which will end around 700? I don't know. I don't think it reaches Avatar. I don't. I think it ends in that 625 to 700 range, which puts it between Avengers and Black Panther.
With Avatar and Force Awakens, the number two and number one movie, Force Awakens is at 937.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get there.
Right. If it doesn't get to Avatar, math says it's not getting to Force Awakens too. But those were both late fourth quarter releases in their respective years.
January, February, March to tack it on.
Yeah. Infinity War doesn't quite have that, although it's certainly off to a bigger start than both of those movies. So you think maybe fourth place all time?
Yeah, I think it gets
to...
That'd
be beating Jurassic World?
It'd be up to Titanic. Titanic's at 659, right, yeah. Jurassic World's at 652. Yeah. So I think it ends up right there with Black Panther. I think it and Black Panther sit at 3 and 4. Whether it passes it to take that 3 spot is the only thing I'm doubting. But I think they end up right next to each other at 3 and 4.
I think that's a safe assumption, and I think it's one that Marvel would take. If they're sitting with the 3rd and 4th highest grossing movies, well, just in this year, that's pretty impressive. So I want to actually start getting into the movie now, and spoiler alert, you know, Dave and I mentioned that we both like it during our impromptu spoiler-free reviews. And I don't want to necessarily start off on a sour note about talking about a thing that I didn't like from the movie, but I do feel like it's something that I have to mention because it happened right at the beginning of the movie. I love the fact that Infinity War kind of dovetailed right in to where we left off with Ragnarok. I love picking up almost immediately where that movie left off. What I had a big of a problem with is with the size of the cast, with all the even second, third tier Marvel characters that were in the movie, I thought it was immediately noticeable that Valkyrie and, to a lesser extent, Korg were not anywhere to be seen.
Yeah, and I've heard that a lot, but I have a couple things about that. Is in the distress signal at the beginning, I believe they make reference some have escaped. So, okay, maybe some Asgardians got on a ship and he sent Valkyrie and Korg to kind of protect them instead of just leaving them on their own. So that makes sense. Or they could just be dead. Like, there's so many bodies. I don't mind them not being there because, especially Valkyrie, if she's there at the beginning, she either has to go with Thor on his journey, which that journey was that
larger role for her in the movie.
Yeah, but Thor going through a lot of it himself, I think, was a big part for the character. Or you have to kill her because there's nowhere for her to just stay. And what do? They find two bodies floating. So I'm okay with them not being there. I'm okay with maybe they got on a ship and tried to escort some Asgardians off because there are so many characters. And I love Valkyrie and I want to see her in more Marvel movies.
And you will. The Russos have confirmed that she lived somehow.
So that's
they don't
fine.
Tell you how. They don't explain it.
I don't know if we get into a Thor 4. Like, it's, I think at this point it probably won't, but I'm okay with that. Like, there's so much going on. I liked Korg and I liked Valkyrie, but that's not why I was coming to this movie.
No, you're right. It's not. For a movie that takes place immediately, it seemed like
it
was
up right after.
It was basically filmed at the same time. I think it's a giant oversight and one that we don't typically get from Marvel, which is so fan servicey, showing you a lot of stuff. I just thought that was sloppily done. It's probably the only thing that I really have a giant problem with in the movie, but it just so happened, I was like, wait a minute, what the hell? Where are these two characters? But it didn't sour my experience.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of the complaints I'm seeing, like with Last Jedi, like there was lot of stuff. But with this, it seems like any article I'm reading that's trying, it's just all nitpicky stuff. And you're doing something right if all you're doing is nitpicking and it's all small stuff like, oh, good thing, you know, aliens all speak the same language or everybody can breathe in space. And it's stuff like that. And I'm okay with that. Like, for this kind of movie, I could suspend that disbelief.
Yeah, there's an atmosphere on Titan. Like, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I guess one of the major nits that get picked with Marvel movies is the lack of a really strong villain. Technically, you know, we were already introduced to Thanos. We saw him quite a bit in Guardians, actually. But he's really getting, I think, quite the origin story in this movie. And I think it was handled well. I think they're able to balance plenty of motivation for Thanos, as well as not having that explanation or exposition drag the movie down. I thought it was paced really, really well.
I'm almost tired of hearing the Marvel villain problem because Spider-Man Homecoming was last year.
Great villain.
Vulture was just somebody trying to take care of his family. That's all he wanted to do. Killmonger in Black Panther was even better than Vulture, and he had good intentions, just maybe his methods were a little different. Thanos falls into that same category. His intentions are good. He sees himself as the hero of this story. That's the key to a good villain, is that in their mind, they are the hero, because without that, their motivation doesn't make any sense. And he is doing a great service to the universe in his mind.
He feels that way.
Yeah,
it becomes a philosophical thing.
I'm going to snap my fingers. I'm going to sit back and watch the sunset on a thankful universe. And they're not going to be thankful right as it happens, but down the road, it'll be evident that he was the hero. And that means
when he mentions Gamora's home planet, where after he exterminated half the population, now they're thriving.
Yeah.
So I guess he was right.
That means a lot, is that he's not just like Killmonger. He wasn't just a dick to be a dick. He had a purpose. He had an end game. He had something he wanted to accomplish. And you know what? He wasn't wrong, but probably could have met somewhere in the middle as opposed to
can we kill a quarter of the people?
Yeah, but I mean, you're getting those villains now to where not every villain has been bad. Like
Zemo a lot in Civil War.
Yeah, exactly. You have 19 movies. So are you going to have 19 killer villains? No, but you've had some good ones. It does bother me that we hear this Marvel villain problem because they're addressing it. And they're addressing it really, really well.
I think that's more of a legacy complaint of people just wanting to try and knock the Marvel movie, whatever it is, Marvel movie du jour, off the pedestal of just going with this kind of tired, well, the villain sucks. That's not so much true anymore. Did Whiplash suck in Iron Man 2? You bet. Yeah. But are we in a much better place now with villains than we were 8-9 years ago? Absolutely. Even some of the secondary villains, I actually enjoyed the Children of Thanos. I thought
Black
they were
Order,
cool.
Yeah.
And I think that having them allowed for some really cool action, because Thanos is the bad guy in the movie. But, you know, our heroes are so spread out that unless they're fighting Thanos, what are they doing? And in order to keep that action, you know, we were able to break the Children of Thanos into a couple groups and have them fight different factions of the Avengers, and I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, and that's where they did well, because I was afraid to keep all the Avengers busy, you're just going to have, like, nameless aliens.
Right.
Like they had in the Avengers, and like they had at the end of this. But that was it. You weren't fighting those things the whole time. So I was okay with that. I liked Proxima Midnight. I really liked Obvious Maw. Those were the two highlights of it, because I just think they were done really, really well. And we've talked about it before, considering for different movies, is like when your henchmen are also characters and not just henchmen, that means a lot. Like, I think Obvious Maw got the most because obviously he doesn't shut up. So he got a lot of talking and you kind of got his motivation and stuff. And you see how loyal they are. It was cool, though, because there's all those different fighting styles. And I like that they were in pairs. So you do get these cool fights and they all got to fight kind of everybody. And then it gives you more heroic kills that you get to see. So
right, and you know, I guess you've seen the movie, so you know Thanos doesn't really, you know, he's not defeated by the Avengers. So if you don't have the minions, basically it's just a squash match. They lose, and there's not a whole lot to be excited about at any point in the movie. But what you can be excited about when the Russos specifically are helming an Avengers movie is that team up action that we get, and a lot of it is fighting the henchmen. But I think my favorite fight scene in the movie is the battle on Titan with Spider-Man, Iron Man, Doctor Strange.
Quill.
Yeah. Just Doctor Strange using those portals to warp people
magic.
In and out. Yeah.
More magic. Magic with a kick.
That was awesome. Like, and Quill with the double bird as he's flying through. Like,
and just jumping on the, like, and that's what the Marvel movies have always done is, we've mentioned it before, talking
ready to
about,
go, Arrow guy.
Yeah, almost any Marvel movie is that they don't just have these fight scenes with all these characters together. the characters look like a team. Like even the Civil War fight where Bucky and Cap are fighting Iron Man, tossing the shield back and forth. And, you know, the airport scene in Civil War, I think, was the best use of this. But you see it in everything. Like they're all on the same page and they look like this great team. And even Quill showing up and jumping along the things from Strange and everybody working together. Like, it's awesome because everybody has the stuff that they do well. Everybody complements each other. And that's why you can have a character like Hawkeye and have a character like Black Widow who aren't these superpowers. And it makes sense because, okay, they have the role and everybody else is taken care of.
And when we first see sort of the Cap Avengers, when they show up in Scotland to help out Wanda and Vision, like that was a pretty dope fight scene too. And, you know, those aren't powered heroes for the most part. You know what I mean? Like they're strength, speed, all that. But
while the one on Titan was probably, it was up there.
That was my favorite.
It was up there. I really liked Okoye and Black Widow.
Yeah, the girl fight, basically.
Yeah, against Proxima Midnight. Like, I really liked that one. That was awesome to me. And, I mean, obviously the big battle scenes where everybody with the Rocket and Bucky and all that stuff. And I thought it was really, really good where everybody got good moments in their fights. And
I think you go to a Marvel movie at this point, or an Avengers movie, maybe even specifically because of where I'm going, and you expect good fights. Something that we've also grown to expect is, you know, you look at the Guardians movies, how well the chemistry of the actors and how the writing works well within the Guardians. And okay, we've seen the Avengers and how well that works, but to kind of switch things up, and you know, we got to see Thor with the rabbit in the tree. I loved that. One of my favorite pairings was Doctor Strange and Tony Stark. I thought
because
that was
those characters
fantastic.
Are the same.
Yeah,
and that was the big complaint when Doctor Strange came out, was like, oh, this is Iron Man.
Yes,
this movie is Iron Man. It's a prick white dude who goes on this journey of self discovery, gets these powers, and stays a prick white dude. And so to see them two go head to head, I thought that was great. Yeah. And then Tom Holland, you can pair with anybody. Like him and that Tony relationship, I think is great.
Yeah.
Quill is very similar to that Strange and Stark. So to have them all work together, I thought was cool. And I mean, there was so many good pairings and even some of the subtle stuff, like the Rhodey and Sam relationship.
Right.
Yeah. It would make sense. They're two military guys that, you know, are kind of sidekicks. Mm. So they're soldiers. So, yes, obviously they're going to have some chemistry and get along. And just the War Machine and Banner, like just their little stuff. It was done so well. And they did a good job because James Gunn helped with a lot of the Guardians dialogue. Right. They got Taika Waititi in there to help with some of the Thor dialogue. It's a team effort, not just on screen.
Yeah, it wasn't just the Avengers.
But you have Gunn who has molded these characters, and instead of just saying, like, you're sitting this one out, it's like, no, we want your characters in this. So they got all those minds working together so that they do feel like the characters from all the other movies.
It's not Guardians 2.5 or, you know, even Avengers 2.5. Like, we really got to see. I did feel like the Thor and Rocket and Groot stuff, I would love to see that movie.
Oh, I'd love a Thor Rabbit movie.
Yeah, I would love to see these kind of team-ups. I would absolutely pay to watch the guys in Wakanda, or I'd love to see Spider-Man, Doctor Strange in an Iron Man movie.
Like even Rhodey and Falcon. I would watch that movie. I want a Sam Wilson Captain America movie. Put Rhodey in there. Like, I would love that. It did so well. And it's hard to, like, I don't have anything negative to say about it. I truly, truly don't.
And that's fine. At this point, maybe our fanboys are showing, but I don't really care. I was very excited to see the movie. And when I left, I was excited to see it again. So I like it. And getting into the reasons why I liked it, I mean, there were, the fight scenes were awesome. The relationships were great.
The one-liners, like, I am Steve Rogers. Like, the lines like that, like,
this is my friend Tree.
Yeah, like there's so many good, just good lines in that. And, you know, he calls him Grimace. like
Squidward.
Like in Footloose?
Yeah.
Is it still the greatest movie ever? It never was. Like, I loved it. I loved the relationships. I'm excited to see where they go in the second one because you're going to explore different relationships.
Right.
And I can't wait for that. And I like that it is the ultimate universe builder. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they keep that going in future movies to where it's not like Thor with Hulk in there was great.
Yes.
Like, and I hope that they continue with that to where it's just like, I would love for Bucky to stay in Wakanda. Like,
yeah,
he's not White Wolf in the comics, but they've called him White Wolf a few times. Give him the White Wolf armor. How awesome would Black Panther and Bucky in White Wolf armor fighting next to each other be? Do stuff like that. Give me just a Rhodey and a Falcon movie.
And like, that's part of it. Like, I think we knew what we were going to get to a certain extent from this movie. We knew we were going to get Thanos. We knew we were going to get a giant team-up movie. But it was these smaller team-ups that I didn't realize that Thor was going to be matched with the Guardians. Obviously, from the trailers, at least for a little bit, that's how they were going to pick him up. But these other team-ups that I had never seen before that I didn't know I wanted until I saw the movie, and then I was like, oh my God, I want more of this. And part of what I think was such a difficult thing for this movie to try and do, basically, you've got 10 years and almost 20 movies that are laying the groundwork for this. So you're trying to pull together strings from Captain America, from Thor, the first iteration, the origin stories of these characters. We're pulling those strings together. And I think they did a fantastic job of that. You know, there's things from, you know, we hadn't seen Banner and Natasha together since the end of Age of Ultron. So we got to see that.
For briefly. And I like that it wasn't harped on.
Yeah. And it was, oh boy, this is awkward.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's not time to harp on it. So
exactly.
Like, I like that it didn't waste that time.
Maybe that gets explained more in the next one. There were things that I thought, they did a good job of wrapping some things up. We understand the Tesseract and how all these individual things that became so important to their individual movies now are part of a larger whole, like all these movies were. But getting to see, okay, we know Mjolnir got destroyed in Ragnarok, so now
Stormbreaker.
Yeah, now we see Stormbreaker. That was a cool part of this movie. One of my favorite parts was the Hulk. I think they did a fantastic job of, okay, here's the Hulk in Wakanda, so we think, all right, at some point, Banner's going to get... No,
yes.
They just lied to
us. They put him in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, and I like that because, you know, we don't get solo Hulk movies because of legal stuff.
And we're not going to.
Yeah, because of distribution stuff. And they've said, like, the Hulk has a 3-movie arc.
Yeah.
It starts in Thor Ragnarok through the Avengers, and it'll end in 4. And I like that because the whole thing in Ragnarok was, I don't want to turn back into the Hulk because once I do, I don't know if I'll be able to turn back.
Right.
And at no point did he consider, if I turn into Bruce Banner, maybe I won't be able to turn back into the Hulk. And that's what you're dealing with.
And maybe the Hulk doesn't want to turn back into the Hulk.
Yeah, and that's what you're dealing with in that at the worst possible time. But ultimately, would it have made much difference? No. I mean, he got destroyed pretty easily
yes.
by Thanos at the beginning, which I thought was great because it showed Thanos is not just this figure, like he's a badass, like he straight up hand to hand beat the Hulk, and it was an awesome fight. Like, it was quick, it was well choreographed,
and you could have imagined, I mean, you see the entire Asgardians, Thor included, it has been laid waste to.
Yeah,
so you know it's gonna take a badass to do that. But yeah, to see the Hulk handled so quickly, and knowing, okay, this is how powerful Thanos is to start the movie.
Yeah.
By the end of it, no, it wouldn't have made a great difference in the grand scheme of things, but it's a really cool thing in a movie that already has so much going on, so many storylines that they're trying to wrap up, to plant the seed for another one and have it feel very organic, I thought was really well done by the writers and the directors.
Yeah, it definitely leaves you wanting the next one. And it leaves you relieved in a way that it's next summer.
Yeah.
And it's not the typical, like, 2 or 3 years between them. Because it was like a gut punch. Like, it was just like a kick in the nuts when those credits roll. We don't see that. We don't see heroes lose like that. Especially at the end of the movie. And we always talk about Empire Strikes Back, which is probably widely known as the greatest sequel of all time. This is probably the closest we've ever come to it. I think it's pretty damn close to where it's setting up the next one. It's dark. I mean, it's laid out what the objective is. It's a dark, dark ending.
It certainly is. I mean, that's where I was able to see the movie. reading some initial reactions on Twitter, and most of them were about the ending, and they were very good not to spoil anything. Just, wow, that ending. Wow. Wow. Oh, my God. How did they even? Wow. And certainly watching that in the theater with an opening day audience, which certainly had its share of nerds in it. But, you know, there was a family in front and a family directly behind. It was a pretty full theater. And I could hear the dialogue going throughout the movie. And when Thanos does snap his fingers, it takes a couple seconds for you to realize the implications of that.
Just like Steve. It takes Steve a bit to the oh God line. Like,
yeah, he did what he said he was going to do. Now we're going to have to see the fallout of it. And when you see these characters that, I don't want to say they started with a character that nobody cared about, like Bucky, but when it kind of works up and up and up, and you see that, you know, nobody's safe. Most of the Guardians are gone. You
all of
see
them except Rocket,
yeah,
and Nebula. But
you see, you know, Black Panther. It was an audible sound from the people in front of me. Tom Holland improvising that scene.
It builds up to that. That kid is so damn good, and I don't think people realize like how good of an actor he is. Like his non-Spider-Man stuff. Like this kid's an award-worthy like actor, and a scene like that, like in that moment, was just brilliant, and it was gut-wrenching, and I loved it. Like, and he's so good.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, if you've read the Infinity War comics or anything, you're not surprised because that happened. Spoiler alert, Thanos snaps his fingers and half the universe
dies.
I mean,
the last shot of Thanos is directly from the comics.
Right. All that stuff happens. So, I mean, you know going in, if you've read the books, that people are going to die. But what I thought was fantastic is you have a character like Spider-Man. It's no secret that there are more Spider-Man movies coming. The date is announced in 2019.
Right after Avengers 4.
Right. But yet this movie, when Spider-Man dies, people behind me aren't thinking that. They're legitimately pissed because they think, I just lost Peter Parker. Or maybe people aren't thinking as cynically as I am that, like, oh, they just killed T'Challa, knowing that his franchise is now the third highest grossing film of all time. The Russos made you believe that we just saw the end of half of these heroes.
And that's my only beef with this movie, is the stakes. Because obviously, everybody that disappeared at the end, I'm not considering them dead.
No.
They didn't really die. They ceased to exist. Which, whatever. We saw how easy it was to undo Vision, okay? But my concern is, leading up to that, Loki and Heimdall, I'm sure
they're done.
Because we probably won't get any more Thor movies. So whatever. But Gamora's a big one. It would be easy to undo.
Yes.
In a moment of redemption for Thanos. If he does, it cheapens it. Vision is easy to do because he's a robot.
And they already
downloaded
him.
You know, he's backed up
him.
In the cloud. Yeah. So between Shuri and Tony, like, Vision can come back.
We'll see the black and white Vision.
Yeah.
Maybe in Ant-Man we'll see him already build another Vision.
Yeah. So that's my concern is, are those final? Kevin Feige said, coming into this movie, like, the deaths are final. Like, we're not retconning anything. Somebody dies, they're staying dead. I think that's where you get the... At the end, I don't think they die.
Right.
They disappeared. So those, I think you can undo, and it doesn't make him a liar. If you do undo Gamora and Vision, and to be honest, like, do they need Vision in the MCU? Unless you're going to do like a House of M movie, which I really don't think that's high on their priority list. They don't really need them. So keep them, and I mean, you're going to be introducing, and I think you're going to want to pare down this original roster anyway. I was shocked there weren't more deaths. Like, I thought...
More real deaths?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I thought Tony might actually bite it when he was there, but I liked it. You know,
I think those are being saved. When the deaths...
Oh, yeah. You can't kill Tony or Steve until they see each other again.
Right. I think we'll see that in 4. They're not going to retcon things, but I think a way, not retconning, but these people that disappeared, souls that get taken by the Soul Stone end up in the Soul Dimension, which is sort of ruled in the comics by Adam Warlock, and they've cut him out to this point, But at some point...
I don't think he'll be in till Guardians 3, which is after
right.
all this.
He may not. They may, instead of going to the Solstice, maybe they're in the Quantum Realm now.
And that's where I think.
Which is a big part of the Ant-Man movie and possibly the Captain Marvel movie. So I think there'll be a way to explain where these people went, that they didn't actually die, but yet in retrieving them, I think there's going to be...
I think the Quantum Realm is going to come into play.
You would imagine. And speaking of Quantum Realm, we know that's a large part of what the Ant-Man sequel is going to tackle, looking for the original Wasp, where last we saw her, went into the Quantum Realm. And on the one hand, you know, they've got over 60-some Marvel characters in this movie, but if you're anything like Sarah, you're just so geeked out of your mind waiting for where's Hawkeye. You can keep looking, but you're not gonna find.
They addressed it, like they mentioned it,
that
so it wasn't just like, oh, he's not here.
They took the deal. They're on house arrest. But you know, the Avengers that we didn't get to see, Hawkeye and Ant-Man specifically, I think that sets up an interesting how, knowing the what happened at the end of Infinity War, that's kind of the elephant in the room. So with Ant-Man coming right on the heels of that, or in a couple months, like, that can't be in a post-Infinity War.
It's a post-Civil War world.
Right.
So, and that's the only thing.
We see Scott with the ankle bracelet on in one of the trailers,
I
believe.
And that's the only thing I think people are going to be confused, because you can't have Ant-Man and the Wasp. You can't expect it to be a follow-up to Avengers. It's before the Avengers. So I think the marketing is going to make a push to kind of make that clear. It and Black Panther and Spider-Man are all right after Civil War, which is like 2 years before Infinity War. So, I mean, there's like that 2 year gap that the timeline, Marvel is just, it's all over the place now. I don't know that the average viewer is going to get that or that they care.
They may have to make some references to Civil War specifically, or
which they do
the
even
Accords.
In the trailer, like, oh, you wouldn't have been caught. Like,
yeah, exactly. To really let people know that, no, that's been the biggest thing that's happened, really, is, you know, the attack and that sort of thing. But I really do think that Ant-Man is kind of the perfect movie to follow up Avengers. If it's not going to be Avengers 4 is the next thing we see, I do think you kind of need a palate cleanser. And if that's all Ant-Man is a palate cleanser, I think he's the perfect hero to do that. But part of me also thinks it's the Quantum Realm stuff that they're going to introduce so that you don't get whacked with it in the face with the next Avengers.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was the follow-up to Avengers 2 as well. I think it works because it is going to introduce more of the Quantum Realm. And the first Ant-Man was such a contained personal story that I feel like this one might be the same, to where it's more personal for Ant-Man and the Wasp, and you're introducing the Wasp. It's basically going to be a Wasp origin movie almost.
Though we did see Evangeline Lilly in the last one. And
yeah, so I'm excited for it, but it'll be interesting because I think Captain Marvel is a perfect follow-up, and it's almost like that machete order with Star Wars, where it's like, okay, end of Infinity War, and then now we go back to the 90s to kind of introduce Captain Marvel before we go into Avengers 4. So I like that aspect of it. So, I mean, I'm excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp because I love Ant-Man. It's easy to love these Marvel movies right when you leave them, but then how do they sit with you and how do they resonate? Like, for me, I loved Doctor Strange when I left. I don't really rewatch it. Like, it doesn't really rank high for me anymore. Ant-Man still does. Ant-Man,
although after seeing Doctor Strange in Infinity War, I'm all about more Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah.
That was dope.
No, especially if Mordo is the villain in the second one. Because Chewie is phenomenal. But, I mean, I love Ant-Man. I mean, the first one is probably top five Marvel for me, if not even higher, because I love Paul Rudd. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited for Captain Marvel, which was set up in the credits.
The post-credits scene, which was a reshoot. This movie was to be released. It was going to be the only MCU movie to release without a post-credits scene. And you know what? I agree with that decision. Had they not done it, this movie does not end like all the other ones. It leaves you. I mean, in the post-credits does the same thing because we see Maria Hill and Nick Fury both flake off into wherever. So that's not happy either. It would leave you to sit with the deaths of the heroes you just saw and essentially Thanos seeming victorious. I don't like being left there, but I like that they make you sit in that feeling.
I agree with them adding it because in the theater, I went Friday morning at 10 a.m. I took Grayson, my 5-year-old, and there were maybe 20 other dudes all there by themselves.
Right.
So it was like 20. It was just all dudes by themselves.
20 comic book guys.
Me with my
daughter.
Yeah. Or me with my son. And then when I went Sunday, it was packed. And there was this feeling like when that Avengers Infinity War title card comes up and then starts to fade away, like you can tell there's a feeling that like, oh, there's a scene here.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't. And it was just, I think they had to because people are going to sit through the credits of that.
Yes, they are.
And I feel like that end is such a gut punch already that if they sit through the credits and it's just over, I think that gut punch turns into like pissed off.
Because you're expecting that from a Marvel movie. At this
and like Homecoming was funny with Captain America. That was a good tag on because he didn't have anything, so that one was good. But like this one was perfect. It set up the next, I mean, Ant-Man and the Wasp is the next coming out, but in the order of the movies to watch, Captain Marvel is the next one. And
you know, we know Ant-Man and the Wasp are going to be in Avengers 4 because that's been confirmed. We do know Captain Marvel is going to be in Avengers 4. They had even talked about putting her in at the end of Age of Ultron, which I'm glad they didn't do because that would have been really undermining her. But what it gives us in that scene is something you don't have at the end of the movie. That's hope. You know that, like, okay, there is a plan in place, and we're going to be bringing in one of the hardest hitters. I mean, Kevin Feige has basically said that Captain Marvel is probably the most powerful hero within the MCU at this point. So by bringing her in, or at least letting you know that she's on the way, you know, help is sort of on the way for this team that we saw basically be decimated at the end of the movie. So I'm not upset that they put it in. Maybe that's just contrarian of me thinking if they didn't, I would have got to hear another 10 minutes of the girl behind me bitching, I can't believe you made me watch this movie. Everybody's dead. This is such a bummer. And then if she'd have sat through the credits and then had nothing, she'd have been really mad too. And I would have got a pretty good laugh about that.
The thing is I thought it was well-paced. You mentioned that a while ago, but it was just, we're way into these movies. We understand the timeline and everything. And it's funny to think that there are people that aren't. And I remember the overheard conversation.
$260 million. There's a lot of people that aren't into it as much as we are.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the masses.
I mean,
there.
Just at the end, it was a dude and a girl behind me. And when it was over, the guy's like, that was really good. And the girl's like, yeah, I really liked it. And she said, did you understand anything that was going on? And he goes, not really. So I mean, like, and it was like that made me laugh because like here they're talking about how good it was, they didn't follow it, like they didn't understand
because it's funny, it's well paced, there's a lot of action.
Yeah.
It is a great summer movie. Yeah. Maybe you don't understand that Nick Fury's pager, that's Captain Marvel's insignia. I think a lot of people in the theater didn't understand that. The people I was with didn't know, so they asked me, yeah, okay, that's Captain Marvel. Who's she?
Yeah.
Wait about a year, and then you're going to find out.
March, next year, Black Panther time is Captain Marvel, and then we got Avengers.
Then we got Avengers 4, yeah. I thought it was a really cool movie experience, and I am not surprised at all anymore when Marvel's able to deliver that. That's just what they do, and it's what they've been doing consistently for the last decade. Something that hasn't lasted quite a decade and has been almost as consistent, I think, is Movies on Up. Next week, we will be celebrating, or not celebrating, we'll be doing something marking the passage of our 6th anniversary. So we're going to go down with our anniversary episode, and this year, we're going to be looking at some movies that we think sort of define the podcast. We've got 6 movies. Dave's picked 3. I've picked 3. That we feel define the podcast. And then we did an exercise where Dave picked 6 movies that he feels sort of represent me, and I've done the same thing for Dave. So I guess for 6 for 6 is basically what we're looking at.
And we'll explain more of it next time, why there's more of a reason why we're doing that other than just the 6-year anniversary, which we'll get into. But I'm looking forward to it. Like, this is one of those where it's like, oh, I'm like, I could probably rattle off 6 that I think would define me, and I'm probably going to be pretty close to
There'll
him.
Be some crossover,
so, like, I'm
I think.
Excited to see what Ryan said exactly, and I think it'll be cool. And, you know, I always get sappy on our six-year anniversary, or on any anniversary episode, but it'll be fun. This was fun. I love the Avengers. And
yeah.
And then we get into summer.
We could just see it again and talk about Avengers again next week, and that'd
yeah,
be fine.
I'd see it a third time.
I would be willing to bet that an Avengers movie will be mentioned next week. Probably not. Hell, I don't know. Maybe Infinity War does sneak its way in there. But at least one Avengers movie will be mentioned. To find out which one that is, it's the first one. Come back next week for our sixth anniversary episode. But until then,
keep it up.